great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com on White Mountain Radio, off and running. Great show ahead. Big news around the Coyotes today. Players going to the Olympic Games next month in Russia. Rich Rodriguez, his status. The Suns leaving today to go play in Chicago. That's right. The future of Kadeem Carey. Ken Whisenhunt. There's a lot going on in Arizona sports. We're Arizona-centric. Our website is sports360az.com. We're not the usual run-of-the-mill, same old stuff, scores, stats, all that. A little bit deeper, actually a lot more deeper in certain areas. And we do quite a bit around the Arizona sports scene. Check us out there. Eric Sorensen is playing a little hurt today, but he has our... how hurt are you today, by the way? Our Facebook question of the day.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
You're under it? Stay away?
Yeah, I'm just kind of fighting it.
Kind of fighting. You know,
happens.
It's fine.
It happens. It's that time of year, germs and people and...
Look, you know, they think that we live in this bubble when we do this thing every day. It's fine. It's fine. You're, as long as you have a good question, I'm willing to tolerate you being here infesting the whole staff, and so we'll be done for a week.
I licked every single door handle this
morning. Awesome.
All of them.
You probably breathed on this microphone.
Well, Brad, today's question is, as the BCS can only do, it went out with a bang last night in Pasadena. And with the new playoff format starting next year, we ask you, another true or false, two straight true or false.
Yeah.
True or trolls.
True trolls, yes.
Todd Graham will get ASU in the playoffs in the next 3 years.
Before it expands to 16?
Correct.
Wow. Because you know it's going to expand to 16 teams.
Of course.
Everybody's like, oh yeah, playoffs are next year, it'll be four. No, a year from now, they're going to be screaming for 6 or 8 or 12. It's going to grow.
Especially after this season and all the chaos in the BCS games. The upsets and the underdogs and the drama. So,
you know what? For all the banging on the BCS, and by the way, I'll answer that one as no.
I will too.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. Look, it's a lot of work. Plus, when you're building a program... And I don't know how well Todd knows any of these people that are on the panel, on the selection committee. There's a selection committee now that's part of this deal. I don't know how well he knows these folks. I don't know how well whoever the new athletic director is going to be at Arizona State. Do I think Todd Graham can go out and have a perfect season or have a one-loss season? And it's not really if you have a one-loss season, it's when you lose that game.
Sure.
You know?
And this year, this team got a lot of breaks. Obviously, everyone knows what happened with Wisconsin, but they had some things go their way. Not that they weren't deserving to reap the benefits of a 10-win season, because they absolutely did.
Right.
But they had the advantage of, coming back late at UCLA and having the Territorial Cup in Tempe with a chance to host the Pac-12 title game. That really didn't mean much, but it's kind of convenient.
They lost early to Stanford. They got lucky against Wisconsin.
Yep.
No matter what people are going to say about this last season, you can poke some holes in Arizona State's resume. I'm just wondering, why are you not giving any love to the U of A? Do you just think that there's no shot there? Because I agree with you, by the way. Just, you know that there's these U of A people that are hiding out in the bushes thinking that both you and I went to ASU and we didn't. We don't care.
Well, yesterday's Facebook question was about U of A, so those people can just answer yesterday's.
Yeah, take off with
Rich Rodriguez, better job, Arizona or Louisville? Sports360az.com/Facebook.
All right. I do like that question. Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports. It's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino, we're off into the new year. That means the Winter Games are coming up before you know it. Not only can you win by pulling down the slots and eat great food, stay at a great spot, go snowboarding or sledding at sunrise. I was with a couple guys this morning that stayed at the Honda Resort and Casino. They said, we heard you, Brad, talking about it. We went. We had a great time. Said, you hear about the Winter Games? No. Plenty of information coming up. The Winter Games later this month. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. And, of course, you can stay and ski and snowboard and have all the fun at the Sunrise Ski Resort. So the game last night, I'm going to start with some national stuff. The game last night, for everybody who said it wasn't very good, well, I don't know. There were some pretty interesting moments in last night's game. There was a fake punt. We like fake punts. There was even a big special teams play in last night's game.
I apologize.
The end zone, and the Seminoles are going to bring it out. This is Kermit Whitfield to the left side. A hold to the 30. 35.
No!
Kermit Whitfield to the 50. To the 40. Kermit Whitfield to the 30. To the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, FSU.
That was the Auburn side. No, I kid.
Yeah, yeah. No, so that's the color analyst who gets paid money to go, yeah! Can we hear that one more time? Remember, the color analyst is supposed to give us something about the play.
35, yeah! 40, yeah! Whitfield to the 50, good. To the 40, yeah!
Great.
To the 30.
Thanks for the description. Play-by-play guy is probably going to lean over to him, just smack him upside. I think that's Gene Deckerhoff, who's been doing the games forever at FSU. Yeah! Yeah! I love hometown radio guys. It's just the best. There was a big run in this game, too. Trey Mason with the touchdown run.
Mason taking it to the right, to the 35. Mason to the 30, to the 25. Mason has a first down to the 20. He breaks free at the 10, at the 5. Auburn touchdown! Trey Mason, he did it on his own. 37 great running yards, and the Tigers take the lead. 30-27.
That's Mike Tirico. So Gruden was his analyst, I think, last night. Eric, did you hear any of the radio broadcasts? I did not. But I
did not. And I didn't go to all the little fun little telecast stuff that they did. I just kind of watched the game. Yeah. I don't know why, because I don't like Brent Musburger, but I just stayed on.
Well, but no, my point is, I believe Gruden was with Tirico because there was this big buildup on social media about how Gruden and Tirico were doing a game. I can't imagine Gruden going, yeah, yeah. You know, you hear Mike do the static, straightforward, play-by-play NFL guy thing. So this game, remember, Florida State, unless you missed it, this is one of the best games I've seen. Auburn's up 18. It's 21-3 as a snooze fest. I'm flipping around all these other games, and it comes down to the final moments. Here's the Florida State. I can only imagine. I've not heard this yet. I can only imagine what Florida State's radio was like at the end of this game.
17 seconds, I formation now. Here's the snap. Winston rolling right. Throws the pass on the end. It's caught! It's caught! It's caught! Touchdown FSU! Calvin Benjamin! Knowles retake the lead with 13 seconds remaining.
No yeah guy? Come on, what is his deal? I mean, they just won the net. I'm all built up.
They might have muted his mic.
They might have shut him up. Gene Deckerhoff just yanked the cord off his head and strung him up and said, don't say a word. Don't say anything. That's funny. So it's late in the game and no color analyst screaming. Yeah! Nice game. I thought the funny stuff on Twitter last night and on Facebook was Jameis Winston. At halftime, it was J-M-I-S-S Winston. Jameis. That was good. I like that. That's smart. We like smart here. He was Jameis for three quarters last night. But you had a fake punt. You had a 100-yard kickoff return. You had a last-minute comeback. So the BCS went out with a bang. If people want to rip the BCS to shreds, this was an amazing year in college football. It really was. You're down four with 79 seconds to go. Was the BCS really that bad? In the grand scheme of things, were there some inequities? Sure there were. Are there going to be more inequities now that we have a group of human beings that are going to sit there together and decide who it is, not computers, human beings, are going to sit there and say, well, let's take this team. Well, let's take this team. And they're not going to have any bias. No, they're not going to be any biased at all. Heck no. They're not going to have any rooting interest. They're not going to be lobbied by any person, any way, any shape, or any form. There's not going to be some big cigar from Texas who's going to say, hey, let's go play golf. And by the way, I'll pick you up in my helicopter. And by the way, here's a box full of dough. And these guys are going to say, no way, we're never going to do it. To think that there isn't going to be some little moment where some of these guys and girls are going to be tested, come on. But it was a great way to end the season. I did watch last night. I don't know how many of you consume your media. We're all in a different phase now. I consume most of my media on my phone or my computer, my laptop. I do not watch TV very much anymore. There's really no reason to say I have to sit here and I have to make an appointment. But last night for about an hour, I decided to sit there and watch something that I thought was brilliant that was put together by a network that I usually rip on because they have not done many things brilliant lately. They have taken the easy way out more often than not. They've taken the cheap way out where they're just chasing page views and clicks on sites rather than tell me something I don't know. So there I was last night in the first quarter, and it hit me that I'm watching Brent Musburger and Kirk Herbstreit. I really don't want to listen to the two of them. I really don't. It's sanitized. So I flipped over to ESPN2, and at ESPN2, they had the game on last night, the BCS title game, and they had this group of people that were sitting like in a sports bar. And they were sitting as, there was one table that had a couple of their experts, but then they had a girl there that didn't know anything about the game. And so she was asking questions like, what does the center do? Okay, so it's kind of like the guy that brings his girlfriend to a sports bar and she's clueless. And they had their experts there doing their thing. It was okay. But then I flipped over to ESPNU, and there was Matt Millen and Tom Luganbill with a chalkboard on half of my screen. The other half of the screen was each play. And they had four other guys, and they were diagramming each play. They were going deeper each play, and they were talking. I think it would have been better if they had had beer in front of them. That would never happen. But I think it would have been more entertaining for them to be drinking as the game went along, because they would have started slurring and saying really stupid things. I did think that the mega cast is going to be a mega hit. To think that the NFL wasn't sitting there watching this saying, hey, instead of putting up, you know, dog shows, which get great ratings, or gymnastics from 5 months ago when the NFL is on, we'll just take our other channels and we'll convert them.
Ice skating.
Ice skating, it's huge, right? Not as big as it used to.
Ice skating.
Yeah. I mean, this is where they're able to wedge in some programming.
Counter-programming,
they call it. But instead of that, they took all of their resources and all of their channels and put them into this game last night. And it was phenomenal. I mean, it was really changing. I think you could see that when there's big events. Doesn't matter if it's a World Series. Doesn't matter if it's the NBA Finals. I definitely think that there's a future there. And there was more buzz on social media. And I didn't miss Brent Musburger and Kirk Herbstreit. I like Kirk Herbstreit. Brent Musburger's okay. He's not Keith Jackson. On the other side, so why is it all of a sudden Ken Whisenhunt is a hot prospect? Why is everybody wants Ken Whisenhunt when we didn't want him here in Arizona? That's the latest with Rich Rodriguez, and I'll give you 10 teams to look at in the next college football season. That's next. At the bottom of the hour, Pedro Gomez. We're going to go round and round about baseball, Tanaka, and the Hall of Fame vote. I'm Brad Sussmann. So the game last night did not do a great rating, by the way, just to put all that to bed. The 8th highest rated BCS. It was a tiny, tiny bit better than last year's game, which was an absolute blowout. Welcome back, Brad. Sussmat Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio.
Got a question for you.
Ask. Fire away.
Do you think The Bachelor last night took some of the BCS audience?
You know, when I heard The Bachelor was doing the debut, I was like, come on.
I know.
And I thought of you immediately, but now you're not, well, you're still a Bachelor, technically.
It's on the DVR. We'll probably get to it at some point later on.
Is he really that interesting? He's a former soccer player,
Juan,
right?
Juan Pablo. Yeah, he's okay.
He's okay.
There's not going to be high drama this year,
but
unfortunately.
See what you're saying, though? You're emasculating men, okay? What you're saying is guys were not into the football game because The Bachelor was on.
I'm just saying, some people I know, I'm not going to name names, but a friend of mine didn't watch the BCS game because his wife wanted to watch The Bachelor. So,
well, the guy's got to put his foot down and just say, look, this is my TV.
You would think.
Please leave.
Last college football game of the year.
Go away.
234 more days till football.
It's on
I'm not
Netflix.
Counting, but 233 now. So we're counting.
I don't know. I mean, there just comes a point where, guys, we've got to be, I mean, we're ogres. Come on. We kill cows with our hands and eat them. We don't need to cook the beef. Just say to her, hey, I'm going to be a male chauvinist Archie Bunker tonight. It's the football game. You want to go watch The Bachelor? Knock yourself out of your girlfriend's house. Please leave. It's fine. You want to go lust over that guy was a reject, I heard, from The Bachelorette. He didn't even make it on The Bachelorette because he just kind of stood around and didn't say anything. So is he really that interesting? He's got, what, 28 girls he's going to make out with, and then he's going to choose one of them? I hope he goes and gets his shots. The mega cast. One other thing about the mega cast. So, did you see Tebow last night, Eric? At all?
No, but I heard people on social media ripping Tebow. So
Tebow predicts the final score to be 35-31. He was 1 point off. He picked it 35-31 Florida State. So he's 1 point off. So everybody's giving him credit. Like, that's the credit you need. But he and Manziel were together breaking down the game at halftime on one of the channels.
Oil meet water.
Oh, it was, you know
water
what?
Water meet
was,
oil.
It was really good.
I can imagine.
It was really good TV. Like, you can't script this sort of thing. I liked it. I liked it a lot. So I know I'm gushing over it. Next season, we look ahead, and I'm going to get over to Wiz and a couple things. There's some good news with the Coyotes today, and Pedro Gomez in about 7 minutes. So we look towards next season. I think in the Pac-12, as we sit here today, Marcus Mariota is returning to Oregon. So Oregon would have to be, in my opinion, and as much as they have on the other side of the football, Oregon would have to be ranked right up near the top with Ohio State, because you have Braxton Miller coming back at Ohio State. Eric's had a man crush on Braxton Miller for a couple of years. Auburn loses quite a few people. Oklahoma, which, by the way, landed another recruit out of Arizona yesterday, Natrell Curtis out of Mountain Point, says, ASU, I'm not coming. U of A, I'm not coming. I'm going to Oklahoma. So we can't keep our kids here in the borders, but Oklahoma's going to be better. Florida State's going to be Florida State. They have the Heisman Trophy kid coming back. Come on, they're going to have all these guys drafted. As a James Wilder's kid is coming back next year. You know Alabama's going to be there. You're going to have Bryce Petty back next season and C. Strunk. So I think Baylor's going to be right there. I think with Hundley coming back at UCLA, you've got to look at Hundley and Miles Jack, Eric, that UCLA is going to be ranked in the top 10 next year to start the season.
C. Strunk's actually going pro.
Did he turn pro?
He's leaving.
He took the money?
He's gone.
All right.
But yeah, Bryce Petty is a good place to start because he's pretty much a huge chunk of the Baylor offense. So.
Okay, but then you have Stanford too. See, I think you're going to have Stanford, UCLA, and Oregon all ranked in the top 10 to start next season. So when people are on this Arizona State bandwagon, I'm not saying you're crushing ASU or U of A for that matter, but the facts are that three of the top teams in the nation, and we don't know the schedule yet. We don't know. I haven't seen it. Have you seen it where they're going to have Oregon or Stanford or not have Oregon and Stanford on their schedule for next year? This last season, they missed Oregon. It was fortunate for Arizona State. My point is you've got to have some luck along the way. Wisconsin's going to be very good next year. But at least three teams in the Pac-12 should be ranked in the preseason top 10. They should be. The Sun story is kind of interesting. So they left. The story is they left this morning. Eric, that's what you're hearing? They left this morning for
the weather, I guess, in the Midwest isn't it's not perfect conditions.
No, it's
I guess
awful.
They got some cold weather there.
Dreadful.
Or something. It's like minus 48 without the wind chill. So the Suns are doing it like the high school. High school teams don't fly, but they take the bus and they go to the arena and they change and they're
Finley Prep flies, which just came down here, but they fly.
That doesn't surprise me.
Here's Jeff Hornacek on tonight. They play the Bulls. A very challenging trip ahead for the Phoenix Suns.
Obviously, it's a big trip. We got 5 games in 7 nights, so that's where it's going to really come down to. We've had a short rotation, but we've had a certain rotation that's probably going to have to change a little bit just because of amount of games. Hopefully we don't wear anybody out.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key because they're not going to have Eric Bledsoe. So you already lose your top playmaker. You do have Goran Dragic. You can move him over. Here's P.J. Tucker. P.J. Tucker's just been a dirt worker for them. All he does is go out and do the little dirty things. So, of course, trips, travel, all that stuff doesn't mean a thing. He's just focused on basketball.
For me, it's like the best part of the season because it's all basketball all the time, night in, night out. So it's the time. Everybody's trying to get wins right now, playing so many games, especially beginning of January. So just try to rack up as many as possible and go out and play hard.
And here's the thing. If there was a team you'd want to open the road trip against – it would be the Chicago Bulls, and here's why. Yesterday, they traded away their blood and guts, Luol Deng. Very good player. Traded him away to Cleveland for a bag of rocks named Andrew Bynum. It's a total salary cap deal. I have to wonder what Derrick Rose is thinking, watching the Bulls just say, we're done for this year. We're finished. And they also ended up getting a couple of seconds and a first-round pick out of it, the Bulls did. But that's a really, really hard deal if you're a Chicago Bulls guy. And tonight you've got to get motivated in the cold, in the ice, in the snow. Your season's basically over. You're in your early 20s. You don't know what you're going to do. You got a guy like Noah who's a very good player. I love Joakim Noah. Love him as a player. Sometimes he can act like a punk. I'm fine with that. It happens. But for the Suns to open with Chicago tonight is fortuitous for them. Because I think this is a game they should win. They really should. Ken Wisenhunt. So a year ago, a lot of you were throwing arrows at me because I stood behind Ken Whisenhunt until about the middle part of December, first part of December, before the Seattle disaster. I had said they need to keep him. They need to keep him. He's not that bad. He just doesn't have a quarterback. In Wiz we trust and all that. So they fire him. Turns out it was the right move for both parties involved. Do you think there's a reason why Ken Whisenhunt is now on the radar of Detroit, Washington, Tennessee? All of them want to talk to him. In Detroit, they've already reportedly offered him the job. So he can interview, even though the Chargers have a game at Denver on Sunday, to see what Ken Whisenhunt has done over there with Philip Rivers. Is that enough to convince me that he is ready to be another head coach? It is. Because when I watched Detroit this year in the last couple of years, I didn't see very much discipline at all. And I understand that the Cardinals were tightened up this year. I get that. But I think during the Wiz era, things went from very sloppy under Denny Green to kind of tighten them up. And things started to fall apart. I think the message started to wear thin. And he didn't have a quarterback and nobody could trust him. And the front office was inept. Other than that, everything was great. So for Ken Whisenhunt, I want him to get another job. I think he's good enough. Eric, are you a Wiz guy, or do you think he's better served just being the guy, the number two in command?
I'm a Wiz guy when he's got a quarterback. And if he goes to Detroit, he's going to have a quarterback. And he's proven that he is a quarterback guy. I mean, Philip Rivers from last year to Philip Rivers to this year, it's completely different player. And what I liked is when he went to San Diego, he said, "Here's the playbook, Philip. What do you like? What don't you like? What plays are you comfortable running? What have been effective in the past? Yeah. These haven't worked? Okay, we're going to get them out." Instead of, "I am the coach, you are the player, this is how it's going to be." It's sort of like the metamorphosis. And, you know, when Wiz had Kurt Warner, they were a really good team. When Wiz didn't have a quarterback, they weren't a really good team.
Boy, and I don't know. See, I got to look at it from this perspective. Is Matthew Stafford comparable to Philip Rivers? And in my way of thinking, it's no.
No, but the Chargers don't have a Calvin Johnson.
No, they don't.
And they don't have a Reggie Bush.
But they have a when he's healthy. Killed me in fantasy.
But still.
Don't even bring Reggie Bush's name up.
Burleson. They have skill players. They always have.
I'm not sold on Matthew Stafford. That's my thing. And Calvin Johnson, at the end of the year, wasn't good. He dropped balls you just don't drop. And the Coyotes are in the news today. Mike Smith has been selected to Team Canada. There's five Olympians from the Coyotes that are going to go over to the Olympics in Russia. I was watching Putin last night I was watching John McCain rip on Putin last night on Leno. This Olympic Games over in Russia, strange deal. Lindsey Vonn's out now, so there goes some eye candy. I don't know where they're going to go with it. Tiger's probably going to play golf now in Arizona because Lindsey's not skiing. But for Mike Smith and to be part of Team Canada, this is terrific for the Coyotes. You know, the Coyotes have kind of been off the radar. Their owners a couple weeks ago made some comments about, well, the attendance isn't quite where we thought it was going to be. Hey, guys, welcome to Arizona. Get used to it. Pedro Gomez on the other side. So Pedro was at the Packers game, Eric. Is that right? Froze his keister off there.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think he was. He has his Hall of Fame ballot. He's getting crushed on that. And the Diamondbacks and Tanaka. What's the latest on that? ESPN baseball analyst Pedro Gomez joins me next. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com, White Mountain Radio, and I'm on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Pedro Gomez joins us now. ESPN baseball analyst Brad Sussmat with you. ESPN reporter, because he also was in Green Bay last week. You weren't freezing, though. You weren't at the game, but you did some stuff during the week, right?
That is correct. I did the Niners midweek coverage. So I was in Santa Clara, where it was about, 70 degrees warmer than it was in Green Bay at the same time.
You like doing this NFL stuff?
I don't mind, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's always good to diversify and show you can do more than one thing.
Well, you also had your Hall of Fame ballot that came out, and you're getting crushed on Twitter about this.
Mostly crushed. Not entirely, but mostly. Yeah. But, yes, I have been getting a lot of pushback.
That's fine. I'll get to that in a minute. Let's start with Tanaka and the Diamondbacks and keep it local. What do you know about this guy? His record is amazing, but Is it the competition, or is he just that good?
Well, I mean, I've talked to some major league scouts about him, and they do believe he is. If he were to come here to the big leagues, they do believe that he would be an all-star caliber pitcher, that he is not just a Japanese phenom who can't get it done over here. They think that he's got the type of pitches to be able to compete at a high level here. The one thing that I was told is that as good as Yu Darvish has been, they like Tanaka's makeup more. Mm. The one knock on Darvish, I guess you'd say, is that when things get kind of tough, he likes to pitch backwards. He likes to back into counts instead of going right at hitters. And apparently Tanaka doesn't have that in him. He goes right at the hitters. The one knock on Darvish has been that his pitch count is always elevated. And it's because he's kind of, working the edges of the strike zone instead of just going right after him and trusting his stuff. So if those reports are accurate, you're looking at a guy that probably is a 20-game winner type pitcher and a multiple-time All-Star.
Hideo Nomo?
I've heard better.
Wow.
I've heard better.
Jeez. Well, better than... give me somebody.
Well, I would say, if you had to probably think of a foreign-born pitcher, I know he never won 20, but somebody like El Duque, somebody who was a big-time, big-game guy.
Yeah.
Who didn't shy away from, hey, if it's September and we're at Fenway Park, give me the ball.
Do you think the Diamond, I'm talking to Pedro Gomez for a couple of minutes, ESPN Baseball Insider reporter. Do you think the Diamondbacks have a realistic shot at him? You can go through all the sources, say, and talking to people off the record at the organization. Did they really have a shot landing him, Pedro?
I do, actually. I do think that they do. I don't think it's necessarily, when you think of, it's a much more open posting system now. When the Rangers got Yu Darvish, it was because they had the highest posting bid.
When you
and
say
so they
posting
were the only
bid.
Ones that were able to negotiate. But in this particular case, there are several teams that are after Tanaka, and the Diamondbacks, I've been told, are in the mix. That doesn't mean they'll get him, of course, but they are in it, and there might be some things that he would look at in terms of Arizona and saying, you know what, that might be a good fit for me. It's not necessarily that he has to be in New York or L.A. or the Bay Area, the larger Asian Japanese populations. He might be more comfortable where there's not as much of a spotlight on him and as much of people pulling him in different directions.
When you say posting, so let's go back on this because people may not know how this all takes place now to get a player to come over here. There is a backstory to this that only the inside of insiders are aware of.
Well, the posting fee used to be where, and I know you know this, Brad, probably, but maybe a lot of the audience doesn't, but whoever wanted, say, Yu Darvish, you had to come up with a bid in order to negotiate with Yu Darvish, and the bid was, whatever the highest bid was, the team that owns his Japanese rights would accept that bid, and then if the Rangers, in this particular case with Darvish, were to sign Darvish, which they eventually did, then that posting fee goes to the team, and then separate from that, the contract is negotiated with Darvish, and that's his contract. In Darvish's case, I think it was about $51 million that was the posting fee. But what Major League Baseball subsequently found out with other posting fees from the Japanese players is that only the rich could really go after these Japanese stars.
Right.
And they didn't think that was fair, so they've lowered it to a cap of $20 million. It's a $20 million posting. And whatever team and it's open now, so he can negotiate with however many clubs he wants to. Whatever club does sign him has agreed to pay the $20 million posting fee to his Japanese club, and then on top of that, whatever he negotiates as the contract is his contract. And in this particular case, we're hearing that Tanaka will get in excess of $100 million for himself alone.
Because, see, $20 million as a posting fee for Ken Kendrick to get Tanaka, to me, seems nothing.
Yeah, and you only pay if you sign him.
Yeah, if you sign him.
You don't pay it if you don't sign him.
Sure. So every team would just say, yeah, we're going to pay the posting fee. Now, how can we get $100 million back on Tanaka, or even $50 million?
Yeah.
How are we going to get something back on him? But between the worldwide attention, the merchandising, you see the Japanese media and the foreign media, how they're now swarming around major league teams when they do this. For the Diamondbacks, who have been, I think, asleep, this is no swipe towards Paul Goldschmidt, but he hasn't resonated nationally. They haven't had a national. They tried to make Justin Upton that guy. It didn't work.
No, and in this particular case, when you cover any Texas Rangers game, particularly the games that Yu Darvish starts, it is a madhouse at Arlington Stadium for the media. And it's the attention that the Rangers get on a national level, on a global level, I should say, I'm sorry, on a global level, is astounding.
Right.
So you're right. The payback is, there definitely is a payback to getting somebody of this caliber when you think of the global attention that comes with it. So there's definitely a plus to getting these type of guys, but you obviously have to make sure it's the right guy. The one thing I would say is that because these players have played professionally in Japan, now granted it's not the major leagues, but it is a very good level of baseball, you have a lot more of a scouting background on these players. When it's, say, Yasiel Puig, the Dodgers did hit pay dirt in terms of talent, but they didn't know entirely what they were going to get, because all you have are these little snapshots of him playing in these international competitions. It's not like you get to really scout the player. So there's less of a possible swing and a miss with a guy like Tanaka as there is with some of the Cuban ball players.
A couple other questions, let you go. So when BK Kim was here, you were here, so you knew that whole deal. Yeah, I mean, and so we saw curiosity around BK. I guess what I'm getting at is, would the Valley have a curiosity 10 times around Tanaka? Would he become that guy? Because there were nights, Pedro, where Randy and Kurt pitched in front of half-empty stadiums.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to sell out every game. The TV ratings were better from the business end of things. But do you think there'd be the same curiosity as there was around BK times 10?
Well, because BK was a reliever, I do think it would be more, because you'd know every 5 days Tanaka's taking the hill. And I think you'd see a spike in attendance on the days that he does pitch, wherever he ends up.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it to a large degree in Los Angeles 30 years ago with Valenzuela, where he took that area by storm. Now, granted, there's a large Mexican-American population in L.A., and that also boosted the attendance levels for the Dodgers, because it was, you know, a Mexican-born player pitching for the L.A. Dodgers. But I think that Tanaka, if he were to come anywhere, you know, the Rangers see it with Darvish. On the days Darvish pitches, there is a bump in attendance as opposed to when Derek Holland starts.
Right.
So there is a curiosity, and there is something about somebody coming from somewhere else and taking the game over by storm. If Tanaka is able to do that, absolutely, there would be benefits to whoever signs him.
What do the Diamondbacks have to offer that anybody else is going to bid on him don't have?
I think when you think of the larger markets, I think that, let's say the Rangers. Well, the Rangers have Darvish. I'm not sure that somebody like Tanaka wants to necessarily share the stage with another Japanese-born pitcher. Like I mentioned a little while ago, I think the fact that it's not one of the huge markets like L.A., the Bay Area, or New York, where there is a large Japanese population, where he would be getting pulled in different directions. I think that maybe the more reserved atmosphere that Phoenix would offer in terms of that could definitely be a plus. It would allow him to concentrate on pitching. And by everything I've heard, he is very much a hard worker who loves his craft and puts everything into it. So you wouldn't be pulled in different directions if you were here, as opposed to being a Yankee, a Met, a Dodger, an Angel, or, you know, even a Giant, where there's a large Japanese population up in San Francisco. So it's you know, those are pluses. Those are definitely pluses. Plus, he would come here and immediately be the ace of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be the number one guy opening day. And that's not necessarily the case in New York or L.A. or some of these other areas.
Okay, before I let you go, 50-50, 60-40, what are you calling on this one?
I'll go 40-60.
40-60, but at least
that's not bad.
Yeah, they're in the park. Hey, appreciate your time as always. Stay well. Happy New Year's to you and the family.
Okay, Brad, take care.
Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst. On the other side, running with the Lopes as we do every week. Talk to the Lopes with Jeremy Price, GCU men's volleyball coach. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. Plenty of content up on the site today all around the Arizona sports scene. Also on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Talk to the Lopes. That's next. And every week we talk to the Lopes. Brad Sussmat with Esports 360 AZ, doing our thing on a busy Tuesday. Grand Canyon University, the Lopes in action on a lot of fronts. And today on Talk to the Lopes, building a program, men's volleyball, which is not big on the West Coast, really isn't. It's the East Coast, moved to the Midwest, but GCU does have a men's volleyball program, and they've done very, very well. In building a program, Jeremy Price, men's head volleyball coach, as GCU opens this weekend with road trips up to the Pacific to see at Pacific. And then Stanford. Coach is with us for a couple of minutes. Thanks for jumping on board. Jeremy, how are you?
Well, thanks for having me.
No worries. So let's talk about building a program. And off the top here on Talk to the Lopes, how volleyball, men's volleyball at GCU, how you've been growing, getting better. You had a signature win over Ohio State last year. Tell us about building the program.
Well, I'm beginning my fourth season here at Grand Canyon. It's only the sixth season that Grand Canyon has had men's volleyball. And from where we started when I arrived on campus in August of 2010 to where we are here we are in January of 2014, it's been quite the change, quite the progression, and it's a process that we're still continuing. You mentioned that we had a signature win over Ohio State last year. It was the first time Ohio State had ever not won at least one postseason match in the conference tournament. That was a big deal for our program, but that was last year, and now we've got to focus on two very talented teams coming up this weekend with Pacific and Stanford.
Talk to the Lopes, Jeremy Price, head men's volleyball coach with Brad Sussmat at Grand Canyon University. You can go to gcu.edu for more information about GCU, and they're also on our homepage as well. When you're building a program from scratch, as you walked in there, what was the first couple of items on your mind in the way of attracting players from a roster standpoint? How did you convince players to come to GCU?
Well, the first thing was, if we get players on campus, we have a lot of success and attracting them and getting them to commit, sign national letters of intent, and to come and be a Lope. And I know you've seen our campus evolve over the last several years.
Yep.
As have I. And the energy, the buildings, and I think more importantly, the people that occupy those buildings, what we have at Grand Canyon is pretty special. And when we get recruits on campus, they sense that, they feel that, and they say, I want to be a part of it. And we've had great success over the last 3 years recruiting the type of student-athletes that can help us be a successful championship-caliber men's volleyball program. We've attracted athletes from, if you look at our roster, we've got players from Belgium, from Israel, from Australia, from the upper Midwest to Southern California to Northern California to Hawaii. From the East Coast back in Maryland, we've got a very geographically diverse roster, and they come to Phoenix for the great campus that we have here, the great academics, and you know, some of those upper Midwest guys, it's good to bring them out this time of year when it's negative 10 in Chicago or
right.
Milwaukee, that we get them out here and it's 70 degrees and they can't believe it.
Yeah, say, hey, while you're out here, we have a women's sand volleyball program.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. This isn't half bad, you know. This is not a bad environment. I'm curious, let's go back on something off the top that I talked about. Men's volleyball with gender equity and programs, there's not a lot of Division I men's programs out in the West. Obviously, there's UCI and there's USC and there's others along the coast. But geographically speaking, in the Southwest, what kind of advantage does that give you other programs?
I mean, we are, in one sense, a geographic outlier to the rest of the volleyball world. But as you said, that gives us a unique footprint in this area and to be able to attract some players, because we're not that far from California. So we can get some good California players willing, you know, they can play 5 or 6 hours away from home, or a very short, you know, 45-minute to an hour flight away. So, yeah, we are a bit of a geographic outlier. But I think that I don't think that's hurt us at all. We're close enough that we're able to, for out-of-conference matches, we're able to go up and play Stanford and Pacific this weekend. Next weekend, we're going to go to play Concordia of Irvine, which is the defending NAIA national champion. Later in the year, we go play UC San Diego. And so I think where we're located actually has been great. You know, we recruit a lot from the upper Midwest and Southern California. You know, there's a lot of snowbirds from Chicago in the Midwest out here.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no question about it. We're talking about the men's volleyball program on Talk to the Lopes today, about Grand Canyon University, gcu.edu, Jeremy Price, the men's volleyball coach, with Brad Sussmat here on Talk to the Lopes. I grew up outside of Carlsbad, so I did some stuff around USA women's volleyball program. And it was terrific. And I'm 6'8", so yeah, I had guys that wanted me to come out. I couldn't jump to save my life, so I went a different direction, obviously. But I grew up around volleyball and seeing the sport take hold back in the 80s. I'm curious, from your end, what's a guy like Keith Smith, your setter, what is his options when he's done at Grand Canyon University? Because he's getting a lot of national attention. What other directions can he go with the game after he's done?
In terms of professionally, the best leagues in the world are over in Europe, and the European countries have there's a lot of options, a big range of leagues. The Russian Professional League, the Italian Professional League are generally recognized as the two best leagues in the world. You have to be a pretty exceptional player to play over there. Even some of the top U.S. collegians don't go over there. A lot of the guys from the U.S. national team are playing in Italy or playing in Russia right now. But there's a lot of other leagues that certainly I think Keith will attract some attention. Ben Ponnet, who's another senior who's been an all-conference player the last 2 years, he's from Belgium. He's been on the Belgium junior national team. He's going to get some offers, you know, I would imagine, you know, whether within Belgium or in France or some of the neighboring countries around there. And so there are options. You're just going to have to play a very long way from home.
How about from a club standpoint? Because you've done club volleyball here in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see your job at GCU in seeing clubs for these junior hires and high schoolers so that you don't have to get on a plane and go elsewhere? Are you seeing the club movement for boys improve?
Absolutely, we are. And I think that's one of the most important things. And that's why I want to make sure that we have a vibrant club program for boys in the state of Arizona. You know, we have a lot of great athletes in this state, and unfortunately not a lot of them start playing volleyball at a young enough age where they can be truly elite.
How young should you start, do you think?
Yeah, I think by middle school, that would be a good age to be playing, and the best players, you know, start playing 7th, 8th grade. You know, you could probably get away even starting as late as 9th grade. And if you're really an exceptional athlete, you can start a little bit later, but the opportunities you have, just the sheer amount of repetitions, the amount of practice hours, that just builds up and makes the athlete better. And, you know, I pointed this out the other day to somebody. You know, University of Arizona is number one in the country in basketball. You saw what ASU did on the football field this season, winning the Pac-12 South title. You see the amount of professional baseball players that this state produces. You see the golfers and just the athletes this state can produce. And, you know, as a volleyball coach, you're like, wow, I wish some of those guys would have started in 7th or 8th grade.
Yeah, I understand that. Hey, best of luck this season and this weekend at Pacific and at Stanford. Appreciate the time, Jeremy. Thanks.
Oh, thanks, Brad.
Talk to the Lopes every week right here on Sports 360 AZ. Appreciate Jeremy Price, GCU men's volleyball coach, being with us. Talk to the Lopes, gcu.edu, Grand Canyon University here on Sports 360 AZ, a winning combination. Few things on the college front while we have some time here. So Thursday night, number one U of A at UCLA. And it's not like it used to be. There was a time when Arizona would play UCLA that the world would really stop in the sports scene. I understand this game is going to be nationally televised on Thursday night, and rightly so. It's better that it's not on the Pac-12 network where only six people can watch it. U of A was tested over the weekend in a way that they hadn't been tested before against Washington. Washington is better than what I thought. Arizona State found that out all too well. They can't beat Washington. ASU can't. I don't know what the deal is on that one. But the buildup to U of A and UCLA this week in this state, I think Eric and I had been talking about how we wanted U of A to remain undefeated and number one when they played Arizona State. I think they're going to drill UCLA for some reason. I'm just throwing the curse on them right now, E.
It was a Facebook question we did, and I think it was, how many losses will U of A have when they play ASU? Or maybe it was, will they still be unbeaten when they play ASU? And lo and behold, that game is next week now, correct?
Right, it's next week. Wow. No. And look, on the U of A front, we know all too well that they're going to be there. Unless their point guard gets hurt, they're going to be there in the Elite Eight. We're going to take the show up to the Pac-12 tournament again. We're going to have some fun up there and do that. I think we're also going to go over to the WAC tournament with Dan Marley and GCU basketball.
Why not? Right across the street.
At the same time, we'll go hit both those in March. We'll have some fun. But I think for the U of A, as I've watched them progress this season, their bigs, Tarzewski's not playing as well as what I saw last year, but Aaron Gordon is just a beast and a half.
He's everything that he was supposed to be when he got to U of A.
Right.
And a lot of times those players don't live up to that legacy, but he is definitely one that has.
The other night I saw Nick Johnson and Sean Miller. They were up here in the Valley. They were over at the Finlay Prep Corona game and told Nick Johnson, hey, nice game. He had a dunk fest. He had a highlight reel for NBA draft night on Saturday night, Saturday rather. And, you know, when I look at Nick Johnson and the way that he's playing, who would have predicted that? And if he can get a little bit better of a shot, I think Nick Johnson's got a chance to be a pretty darn good point guard, but he doesn't need to be a point guard for him this season.
Nope.
Kadeem Carey's probably going to turn pro this week, according to Greg Hansen down at the Daily Star. So the U of A on that front, we should get that story put behind us. In the Rich Rod story as it stands right now, Greg Byrne put out the fire. But I still haven't heard from Rich Rod.
Kind of.
I mean, I still haven't heard from Rich Rod on this one.
Greg Byrne's tweet really didn't say anything definitive.
Charlie Strong made $3.7 million at Louisville. Rich Rod was paid $2.25 million
this
last
year. There you go.
Louisville's athletic budget is $96 million. U of A's is $66 million. So there's a lot of numbers there that point in the direction of Louisville. Lots of content up at sports360az.com, sports360az.com on Twitter, and White Mountain Radio.